Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
This episode of the Queer Family Podcast and the entire season is proudly sponsored by Pregnant Together, a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who has ever felt alone or different through the process of creating your family. Check them out in the show notes.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Before I left, I hadn't had any connection or conversation with my ex-wife. You know, I called her and I said, hey, you know, I'm moving to LA and I'd like to talk to you. And she, would you be open to that? And she said, yes. So she came to my apartment. It's so weird. So she came to my apartment and, you know, it was polite and all that. And I said, I have something to tell you. And she said, what? And I said, actually, I'm gay.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I'm your host. And you, my friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is to highlight, celebrate, uplift, and normalize LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And of course, this episode does just that. Y'all, I got to sit down with Courtney and Whitney, their sisters, and their dad, Glenn. And they wanted to come on the show because they have an interesting story. Their dad, Glenn, came out as a gay man when Courtney and Whitney were already adults and had left the house. They were in their 20s. So they had lived their entire childhoods in that heteronormative family life like you do, and then come to find out that their dad had a secret their whole childhoods. It's a moving episode. I mean, a lot of times in this platform I use to record, the video gets kind of choppy and I can't always see the guests' faces, which is very annoying. Riverside, we should fix that. And I didn't notice when I was interviewing them that many times when Glenn was talking, the girls were just like silently crying. It's just, it's a really moving episode, and it's a real testament to the power of acceptance and the power of transformative change and how acceptance of change can actually change lives for the better. And you're just going to have to listen to hear it. And then once you finish listening to this episode, y'all have to go over to Courtney and Whitney's podcast. They also have a podcast called Hey Sis, Eat This. And the show's premise is they interview siblings about their family tables, dinner tables growing up. And they interviewed me. I didn't go on with my sibling. I went on with my best friend, who we've been best friends since first grade. And we've been through a lot together. And she's basically my sister. And it's a fun conversation. And you're going to learn a little bit about the shenanigans I got into with my best friend, who was a really bad influence on me. I blame it all on Casey. But go check it out. It's really fun. Before I roll the tape, I got to let you know, I lost my voice last week. This past 7 days, y'all, has been a parenting shitstorm. I can't even believe I lost my voice, which if you're a podcaster, that's no bueno. Not good. It's finally coming back. My six-year-old developed some crazy rash all over his body, which it's getting better now. And then my 10-year-old just decided to fracture her wrist. So we've been in and out of doctor's offices a lot these past 7 days. What a shitstorm. It has been cray cray. We are just treading water over here at the Kelwoods house. Somebody send See's candies. That's what's going to cheer me up. I don't even know. Send me wine. Who am I kidding? Send me some wine, maybe some tequila. It's been a shitstorm. Anyway, I hope y'all are doing well with your parenting. I hope nobody has fractured wrists or rashes, but you know what? I bet you do. So my heart is with you, parents. My heart is with you. All right, I'm going to roll this tape. Just know, also, I've been having sound technical difficulties. My mic has been not being friendly to me. And you'll hear in this interview that my mic cuts out here and there. You'll still hear all of the wonderful stuff that Courtney and Whitney and Glenn say. I just might get chopped up here and there. It's not too much, but please bear with me. I'm fixing it. I love you all. Thank you for tuning in again and again and again. After this, go check out Hey Sis, Eat This, wherever you get your podcasts. And Helen, Beulah, who don't have rashes or broken wrists, thank goodness, because I can't imagine what that would be like with these lazy fake assistants. I keep looking to the left like they're actually there. There's nobody here. The only person I really have is Nicole, and she is in Massachusetts, and I'm in New York. So Helen, Beulah, Nicole, please roll that tape. Oh, please roll that tape. What a mess. What a mess. Parenting life, am I right? Ugh.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Whitney, Courtney, and Glenn.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Jamie.
I'm very excited about this chat we're about to have because I've heard just basically the top line of your story. I know no details and I know nothing about it, but I can't wait to hear all the details of the story. So without further ado, why don't we just like roll right into your 30-second elevator pitch so the guests can get an idea of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Are you ready?
I think so. Ooh, it's a lot of pressure, but I think I can do it.
I'm going to put a timer up. All the listeners at home know I would never cut you off. So it's just all in good fun. On your mark.
Okay.
Get set. Go.
Okay. We are a family from Texas, Dallas in particular. And our dad, my wonderful dad, Glenn, and my sister is here with me, Courtney. Courtney and I have a podcast that is similar in the vein of Queer Family, that we kind of look through a lens of food to celebrate families. It's a food and family podcast. And our parents were married for 33 years and they got divorced. And then my dad came out as gay at 56 years old and we were in our 20s. And that's kind of where the story begins.
Boom. Okay. That was beautiful. I can't wait to hear this story. And I know a lot about your show because I was just on it with my best friend. We did a little chosen family switch up, not my real family, which is fun.
Sister from another mister.
Yes.
It was hilarious,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was really fun. My best friend is a character and everybody has to go listen to that episode, too.
Yeah.
But let's dig in. So is it just the two of you?
Yes.
Okay, so it's just two sisters. And Glenn, you were married to their mom for how long?
33 years.
30.
But you met in junior high. Let's start there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really? Let's take it there.
Yeah.
Let's take it back.
Well, she was my ex-wife, their lovely mother, was the best friend of my older sister.
Oh.
I have a sister who's a year older, and so she was always at our house. They are, to this day, you know, diehard best friends, which is beautiful. And so that's where I originally met her. Yeah.
That is scandalous, Glenn. That's amazing.
That's not the amazing part.
Even way more amazingness. What's your ex-wife's name?
Margaret.
Margaret.
Margaret. What do you call her on your show?
Mama Ashley.
I don't.
But when did the romance start with Margaret?
Well, probably in high school. I think we had our first official date to a dance club thing called Luann's in Dallas, which incidentally my parents had met or at least dated there right after the war, that same dance club. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is cool. That's awesome. Okay. So were you all each other's first lover, like girlfriend, boyfriends?
No, you were like a real Casanova. I mean, from what I hear, you drove your mom to the hospital when she had your brother on a different date. It wasn't mom.
I went to pick up my girlfriend and her mother said, your mom just called and her water broke. You need to go home. So I took my girlfriend then. I said, do you want to go with me? I got to take my mom to the hospital to have a baby. She said, I guess so. I mean, I'm all dressed and everything.
Oh, my God.
So we loaded my mom in the back of my Mustang.
Right.
I think she had a cigarette going at the time and took her to the hospital and waited until my dad, who was out of town, came and relieved me of duty. And
on with your date.
And you still did the date?
Well, I don't remember much after that. Except that my dad had a big Lincoln Continental and I wanted to drive that instead of this Mustang for some reason. So I said, hey, Dad, I'm going to take the Lincoln. He goes, okay. And I left the hospital and I didn't realize there was a median strip right outside the hospital. And I gunned the car and we went slamming over this big. Yeah, I'm surprised the car didn't split.
Oh,
that's my memory.
Of Uncle Jimmy coming into the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, my 16-year-old younger brother of the same parents.
Years younger. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you were Casanova. You were playing the field.
That's my daughter's version of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the fun version at least. So then you meet Margaret and then...
Well, I feel like I knew her from birth, to be honest with you. I can't remember much of my life story that didn't include her since we met so young.
Yeah. And then you were married. When were you married?
We were married very young. She was 21 and I was 22.
Wow.
Back in, I think, 19.
In college.
Yeah, in college. I had one more semester of college left and she had probably 2 years left.
Wow.
But back then you got married, you know, all your friends got married. Well, hey, you want to get married? Okay, let's get married.
Literally how my dad used to describe how he asked my mom to marry him. I'm not even kidding. It was, they were walking across the street and he says, I said, hey, you want to get married? And she said, yes. And that was it.
Yeah, it was a little different. There were no videos of the proposal or
no
fireworks
flash mobs
going off.
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you get married, you finish college. I have to dig in here. Like, were there ever thoughts that maybe this isn't really the path for me? Like, did that start young or when did that start?
I think every gay person I've ever really dug deep in conversation with, they say the same thing, that they always felt different. They always felt a little bit outside the norm, even if you didn't know what that meant. And that was surely the case for me. Yeah. I just never sort of identified the way I felt I should identify.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of expectations growing up in Dallas, Texas in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah.
Religion played a big role in it. Mm. And all the markers, all the signs I was given about gay people and being gay were negative.
Right.
It was not anything that was acceptable. It wasn't anything that was
celebrated,
ever encouraged or celebrated.
Of course not.
And it had a tremendous impact on me and my approach to it and my own story.
Of course.
I lived basically my whole life until 56 in denial.
Yeah.
And trying to suppress those feelings because they were out of the norm and represented negativity to me.
Right. Yeah. Deviant.
For many, many years. It was really only until I was an advertising copywriter and creative director. And so I was around a lot of gay people in film production and all that. And a lot of my friends were gay. It wasn't really until that experience that I started understanding what being gay really meant. And stop putting some of the rules on it and some of the pressure about it.
Yeah.
Particularly because I was traveling to California all the time from Texas and I could see what a more exciting, acceptable, tolerant community it is.
This is what we say all the time on my show is that representation really is so very important because if you don't see positive representation in the world around you, you have no idea.
Absolutely.
And I'm imagining you didn't know any gay people growing up, or did you?
Absolutely not.
Right.
Nope.
Right. And so
they were.
I mean,
closeted.
They were out. I didn't.
Right.
Maybe they were closeted, but I didn't.
Right. Which makes it even like worse and gross and uglier. And if anybody was closeted and, you know, so yeah, representation really does matter. So you lived that straight lifestyle and you did what was supposed to be done according to, you know, that big plan in the sky or whatever.
The conditioning. But I remember, you know, when you came out and you said, you've said this to me a couple times, you've said, you know, I wanted a wife and kids, or I thought I wanted a wife. Like I wanted that traditional life. It seemed safe to me and I wanted kids. And I think that you were conditioned to really think that you wanted a wife and obviously you wanted kids, but that was, there was no other option.
Right. Well, there's, yeah, there, how else would he have gotten it?
Right. No, right. There were, yeah, there it were, there just, weren't all the wonderful ways that we have now to have children.
Right. And that's where the representation comes in again.
Yeah, the representation. It was the pathway I saw for my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Not, and based on other people's expectations, but to a great extent based on my own. Yeah.
And Glenn, can I ask, did anybody ever suspect you of being gay? Like for me, for instance, I'm just giving you a for instance. When I was in college, I had boyfriends and I had this boyfriend in college. He suspected that I had crushes on girls and he called me out on it. And it was like the worst thing in the whole world because it's my biggest, it was like my biggest fear. What if I am? What if I am? What if I am?
Sure.
Did it, that ever happen in your life? Did anybody ever suspect? Did anybody ever think, oh, you're not like the rest of us?
It's a little difficult for me to answer that because there could be a ton of people who did suspect but never said anything to me about it. I think when I reflect back on it, I was always, have always been a very creative kid. I drew, I painted, I did all the artsy stuff. I was not a sports person, of course. And I had really had difficulty on some levels maintaining male relationships because I never felt I fit in with the jocks and it didn't fit in with, I mean, I remember even, you know, years into my marriage going to cocktail parties and being somewhat terrified that grown men, businessmen would be coming up or approaching me and I would have to make male kind of oriented conversation about subjects that were just
like football.
Like you didn't like, give a shit about.
Like all the, I had convinced myself, it just was terrifying.
It makes sense to hear this because you spent so much time at work where that must have been so safe for you because you were around gay people and creatives all the time. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
I was going to add that, that given some of the turmoil and some of the suppression of thoughts, I just totally committed myself to my career and to my children, I feel, to my family and raising them and supporting them. But I focused, hyper-focused on that, traveled constantly. It was a way for me to be away, I think, from my wife and my family. And yeah, I focused on what I could, where I could bring positive things to contributions,
right?
I guess.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. And I completely 100% understand being afraid of having to make like man small talk at a party. I can totally relate. I say, go talk to my wife. She knows about soccer. I don't know. Yeah. It's like,
I don't mean to be rude, but you know, man small talk is just kind of boring. I don't care what orientation you are.
Yeah.
Conversely, I think a pretty fine-tuned, funny sense of humor. And I could gather a group of women and just make them laugh and think I was the most charming guy they ever met.
Yeah.
I always, and I use that to some extent to
of course.
Get by in social situations.
Yeah. Well,
and all your best friends were women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why can't you be more like Glenn? That's what they all said behind me.
Yeah. I'm sure. Well, actually, so many of my teachers growing up and even friends in high school all had crushes on him because he was so handsome. So, I mean, he still is handsome. But, you know, back in the day, I remember I had this PE teacher. I won't say her name, but she'd always be like, how's your dad? How's your dad? He's so cute. And I'd be like, that's weird. You know, and I would come home and he's like, well, did Miss So-and-so ask about me? It was a joke, you know, obviously. Yeah. He just like the ego boosted. Oh, somebody thought I was hot.
Yeah.
You
know?
One of your girlfriends wanted to take him to prom.
Oh, that's right. What? They're always like, your dad's so cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
And easy to talk to, right? Like,
I'm a good date.
Yeah. Babies come. The little beautiful nuggets that we see here today. You're doing the family thing. You're doing the married life.
And I'm not having any activity on the side.
Nothing.
Zero, zip, nothing.
Nothing.
Nor with our mother.
That's not true.
That's not true. Mom's told me. Just kidding.
Ew.
Okay, we're not going to.
We won't go there. He was the most whimsical, wonderful, creative dad to have. It was so fun. I mean, he, you know, I look back, I think he was playing games with us and doing things that other normal straight dads would not do. And, you know, I just remember I'd be doing shows for him all the time, and he just indulged that and was just, I don't know, creative, fun things that we would do together.
We had a blast as a family when the kids were young. Although, I mean, still do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people look at us kind of weird because the three of us get together and we have our own little Ashley world and our own jokes, our own memories, all that stuff. And then fuck the rest of the world. We're laughing our asses off about what's going on. But we had so much fun and played, you know, so many games, and we're big tricksters and big pranksters. Pranksters. Oh my God. We could tell you some side splitting stuff we've done. Not all very nice, but a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. When did the thought come in your head then? Like, when did this all begin? Because I'm imagining Whitney and Courtney, you had no idea. You're kidding.
No.
It's a process. Yeah. You know, it's a process. It's not like one day you wake up and go, gee, I think, oh my God, I'm gay.
Yeah.
And now, come on.
At 55. Yeah.
At 55. Right. No, it's a process. Mm-hmm. And the older you get, the more mature, the more you take responsibility for yourself, you realize who you are.
And your happiness.
And your happiness and what your makeup is and all of that. So it's a very slow process. So while my own realization of my situation and my sexuality was growing, at the same time, my marriage was declining. Mm. I was not an engaged, happy husband who just wanted to be with somebody and to cherish them and to romanticize them and to give them what they deserved. Mm-hmm. I was withdrawing more and more and more and more.
Right.
That's the biggest regret of my life, really, is the trauma and drama that my personal situation caused to my ex-wife. Mm. To me, it's pitiful, it's sad, and it's regrettable. Although I know I couldn't have dealt with it any other way. And I had a psychiatrist tell me, I went into therapy after I separated from my wife while we were in the process of divorce, to help figure this all out. And he said, but you saved your life.
Mm-hmm. You did.
He said, yeah, but you did all, but you saved your life. Mm. And I don't know. I just have kind of kept that thought in my mind that
peace with that.
Yeah. Peace with things were pretty dark.
Yeah.
Pretty dark for me.
You did what you had to do. Right. And everybody seems fine. So there's that. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast.
All right, folks, I just want to take a second to interject here, because if you've listened to this show, you know that the whole reason I created this show was because I wanted to hear my story mirrored back to me, because I was feeling alone. And a whole community has grown up around this show, and I'm super proud of it. And I love the fact that we've done that. And I have this resource for you that I think is just as awesome, if not even better. It's Pregnant Together, this virtual community of queer folks and solo parents and anyone who's ever felt different in the process of creating your family. I mean, like, it's all of us, right? It is run by queer midwife Maria Goodman, who's been on the show before. Maria also wrote the book Baby Making for Everybody. It's an amazing, amazing book. You should get that too. This community offers tons of resources for every stage of family building, from trying to conceive to parenting. You get monthly live support groups, you get Q&A sessions, you get access to advice from a queer healthcare provider. And best of all, like I said in the beginning, you get a connection with a community of folks going through the same thing as you. And the best part of this is listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month free. Whoop, whoop. So just go ahead, click the link in the show notes and try this virtual community out. What do you have to lose? Nothing. What do you have to gain? A whole community of beautiful, beautiful queer folks and folks who live their lives out of the box. Go check it out.
Love is love.
So at this point, when the marriage is starting to kind of fall apart and you're starting to find yourself, the girls are now away, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in college.
I'm 29 years old.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was in college.
Yeah.
So they hung on till Whitney graduated.
We were still married, and I was continuing to travel all the time. Mm-hmm. I was producing commercials for big clients on the West Coast constantly. And so I used that as sort of my life, you know, and my focus. And I was damn good at it. And I loved every day of it.
Right.
And I was surrounded by some of the most talented, loving, caring people, straight and gay, I feel so blessed to have had a career, had the career that I did have. Mm-hmm. And within our marriage, there was really a lack of communication. You know, as I was pulling away and my wife was, Margaret was trying to fulfill her life being in Dallas by herself the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. She built a friend network. She built a religious network. She's very active, very social. I'm completely the opposite of that. But thank God she is the type mm-hmm. of person that can reach out and fill these holes in her life. And she did. And she's done it, you know, beautifully. But that further, you know, sort of emphasize the separation in our lives, the difference. She had a life over here. I sort of had this business life, this travel life. Mm-hmm. We didn't communicate. We didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
I didn't want to be questioned about it or talk about it because I couldn't even accept it myself.
Right. I get it.
And I won't go into details out of respect for her, but I'll say that there was ultimately a confrontation. Not anything about being gay, but about the relationship. And that confrontation forced me to reply in a way that I never had before. I saw an opportunity when I was confronted about this lack of our relationship to say, wait a minute, I don't think I would have ever brought this up. I don't think that I would have ever really separated. I know that sounds incredibly weird.
Because it was working for you. You were going about.
No, it wasn't working. I was miserable.
Right.
But I would.
You felt powerless. Too much guilt.
I was powerless and too guilt ridden to do anything about it. It's so stupid when I look back on it now. But, you know, my wife basically confronted me about what's going on. Why are we, you know, what do we have here? And we're either going to get divorced or we're going to go into therapy and work all this out. And I had a decision to make at that point. For the first time ever, my response was, you're right. You're right to bring that up. And everything you're saying is true. I need to think about it. Mm-hmm. And I remember lying on the floor. And I remember sort of like looking up to the ceiling and hearing these words from her and this challenge and thinking, whoa, this, shut up. This is to talking to myself.
Right.
Don't say too much. Just take this in and think about what this moment means. It was that pivotal, that big, that monumental to me.
I mean, you had lived an entire life,
It was just several years of stress and pain on the kids, certainly on my wife, who was completely unsuspecting of any of that. She, you know, I'm sure she expected me to say, okay, you're right. We should go into therapy and work on this.
Yeah.
I'm sure she just expected me to say that.
Right.
I was about to go to do a big shoot in Canada and she was going to some church camp or something. And
sounds about right.
No, she's a very loving, giving person. Mm-hmm. And she did that every year. And so I said, let's go away and let's come back and talk about this when we're both home from our trip. Mm-hmm. And then I was consumed by thoughts of what this meant and how do I handle this and what do I do? And I realized that I had to leave. This was time. This was the place. I had to leave.
Right.
And so I came home and made that difficult announcement to her and broke her heart. Broke her heart.
Of a blindside. Didn't see it.
Absolutely. And she's an incredibly strong person, spiritually and mentally. I mean,
her nickname's the Prairie Woman.
Yeah, the nickname is the Prairie Woman.
It always
woman.
Has been, you know. Yeah.
She doesn't
strong.
Hurt. She doesn't cry. She
doesn't get
she
sick.
She trudges on. Yeah. She is a...
Not oof. Super vulnerable ever, you right. know.
She's very strong.
Yeah.
Well, I would add one thing to that is that Daddy saying that he would have never thought he could do it. And I just thought from a very young age, I always thought they were going to get divorced at some point.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Wait. Can we go into?
We talk about this all the time.
Okay, wait.
There was no love. There was no communication.
You could see this as children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh.
Well, there was a tension. I mean, there was a tension between the two of them. And, you know, I think I think it was our normal. So I don't think I necessarily, you know, in retrospect, I thought, well, I just didn't think there was a lot of love there. Right, I don't know if I necessarily knew that they would get divorced. I think you thought they would get divorced. I kind of thought maybe they should get divorced is what I always thought.
I just remember growing up thinking, I don't ever want a relationship like that. Uh-huh. I want to be all over my husband. I want to be affectionate. I want that intimacy that I never saw with my parents.
Right.
Like, I always just thought they would live unhappily ever after.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So did
it's
I.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you thought that a lot too until you were like, I got to get out of this. And I think mom thought that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of marriages that live unhappily ever after, no matter gay or straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Oh, yes.
People aren't brave enough to leave.
I think that it's really interesting though, because it sounds like, you know, Glenn, when you're telling the story, you hid really, really well, like even like to the point where you were even hiding from yourself. You hid, like you were really in that closet.
Really well said.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the thing is, even when we're hiding so well, it still was noticeable. There was something that was noticeable, like to you girls, right? To the kids. Like, so like, even when we think, oh, we're so on this, we got this, it seeps out in other ways. It just seeps out.
Of course.
Like lying to yourself, hiding from yourself. It's never going to work. It's just interesting to me because when you were telling your story, Glenn, I was thinking, wow, like a real success story of hiding it, you know? And then it was still noticeable. It still seeped out.
Yes, all that's true. It's interesting that, you know, there might be people, likely people that I work with that were behind my back saying, I bet he's gay. What's going on? You know,
seriously, sure.
You know, I'm very interested in art and style and fashion. I'm gay. I have all those traits, right?
You don't like musical theater.
That's true. I don't.
I'm with you, Ben.
I don't know.
I know.
My husband does. Does that count?
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, but people have said that I am a gay man trapped in a woman's body. I have heard that more than once.
We're talking in all these stereotypes a lot.
But
you know, stereotypes do exist for a reason. But none of us really fit these molds. None of us.
It's interesting because my internal homophobia, which I still deal with in a difficult way, told me that I didn't want to hear one person say to me after I came out, oh, I knew you were gay.
Right.
I was scared to death. I am still scared to hear that. Right. It's like, that breaks my facade. Oh, you're kidding. You're kidding. I didn't bullshit you. Mm. But there were people I avoided because I knew they were going to say that to me.
Ooh, I have to say, I feel that so much, Glenn. And I was just thinking, as you were starting to say this, I was thinking of the chat I had with you two ladies on your podcast with my best friend, Casey. This threw me when she said this. I glossed right over it too. I was like, no, we're not going there. When she said, oh, I knew you were doing experiments of, I'm like, what are you talking about, Casey? Absolutely.
Right.
No idea. And it cut me to the core. What do you mean you have any inkling? Because like you, Glenn, I figured until the moment I came out, nobody had any inkling at all. And so hearing something like that is like, whoo, it's a physical reaction. It's a,
yeah.
Wow.
I totally feel you, Glenn. You just helped me put that into words, that thought I was thinking about.
Oh, good.
Right. Like, why did that bug me? Like what? And also what the fuck was Casey talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't really care if people gossiped about it or talked about it. That part didn't bother me, but I didn't want to be confronted with it.
Right.
I didn't want someone to say, oh, I knew, of course he's gay. I didn't want to hear that. And that's my own internal, as I said, homophobia. And I continue to deal with that.
Yeah. And we will till the day we die, because it's in the air we breathe.
Yeah.
This crazy, messed up world we live in, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel that. I really do. So, all right. So let's continue on here. So it sounds like the divorce, the separation happened before the coming out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took a year. We separated. It took a year for the whole divorce thing to come down. And I had made the decision as soon as we separated that I was going to divorce and move to LA. because it was my second home. I was spending, you know, 200 days a year here, and I love it here. And
we
so,
were here too.
And the and of course, the girl, I was going to say both of the girls are here, and I could leave behind all this history and just all the things that sort of Texas represented to me. Mm-hmm. Hook 'em horns to my Texas friends. I still love Texas. I didn't mean to be derogatory, but anyway, I had made that decision. So, you know, we went through a very painful, difficult divorce on all levels. Mm. And yeah.
Wasn't that painful for us?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Really?
I mean, well, it wasn't, but we can get into that later. But yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was just, you know, any time after that many years together, you know, it's going to be difficult. And you lose friends. People take sides and boom, people that have been your close friends for 30 something years are suddenly not taking your calls or not including you. And it was just, you know, it was just time for me to start a new life. And
can I interject just for a second? Because Courtney and I were just having this conversation yesterday. And I think in a way you kind of felt like you had to give mom all the friends. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel that way? Because you were kind of leaving her and
you felt so badly. About
you felt
it.
So bad that you wanted to maybe like give her the
people.
Community and the support.
I wish I could say, yes, I made a rational, generous
or
decision.
Just subconsciously,
but
maybe.
I, at that point I wanted to give her
you're running away.
Everything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say no to anything. Yeah. I didn't want to interfere with her friendships or the women that she had taken into confidence and told about. I didn't want to disturb anything. I just quietly wanted to slink away.
Yeah.
The divorce is final. And literally, God, within weeks of the court hearing, all that stuff, I moved to Los Angeles. I'd been living in an apartment in Dallas. I moved to LA. And before I left, I hadn't had any, you know, connection or conversation with my ex-wife. You know, I called her and I said, hey, you know, I'm moving to LA and I'd like to talk to you. And she would you be open to that? And she said, yes. So she came to my apartment. It's just so weird. So she came to my apartment and, you know, it was polite and all that. And I said, I have something to tell you. And she said, what? And I said, actually, I'm gay. Oh. And it was very difficult to, and I hadn't told either of you this. I hadn't told anybody. I was very controlled about how that information was provided. So I told her, I felt like she should know first. Mm-hmm. So I told her, and she was at that point really understanding. And she said, gosh, I remember this. She says, wow, I'm not sure that really would have made that big a difference.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Well, I think it meant at our age,
oh,
we could have lived to continued to be together,
oh,
even if you were gay. Yeah, that's so generous. I was so taken aback by that because I didn't, you know, I was touched by it and I appreciated it, but I knew that couldn't really be.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought she also said, well, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I think she did say that. Yeah, I'm sure she did say that. And I felt pretty good about that conversation. And I was so glad that I had instigated that and that I had handled it that way. But that was not meant to be. Things turned pretty sour after that because a lot of the pain came out again for her. And that was, of course, it was difficult.
Now she had to go through the process of finding out that
the grieving.
Her husband was, in fact, gay the whole time.
Yeah. And how embarrassing for her. That's what I thought. In her social circles and her group of friends, everybody's straight white people that go to Methodist church.
Yeah.
Right? You had a gay husband? Oh,
yeah.
Poor thing. I mean, there wouldn't be much. There would be a lot of compassion there, but there wouldn't be much understanding or I don't think. I don't know. Maybe.
No, because.
But you know what?
There it is again.
I just hoped that they wrapped her in their arms or in their loving spirit of taking care of her. That's what I hoped her friends did.
Well, I think she also made some new friends, you know, through that, like Anne and people that she really had opened up and relied on in a different way than the people that she had been friends with when she was friends with you. She kind of got a new group.
Right. So now there's a new layer to her. There's a new depth.
And she started dancing. She started, you know, taking like salsa classes and, and really, I think she, you know, started her catering company and started feeling really an independent woman for the first time in her life. And I think she got a lot of joy out of that. She says the best time of her life was living alone.
There you go, Glenn. So don't
after the divorce.
I know it won't take the guilt away, but look at that. She got a new life.
I really had never heard that.
Oh, she loved that time. I mean, she was sad and she was grieving, but you know, she loved this woman that lived across the street. They became best friends. They drink their wine at night and chat. Probably got her through a lot of the stuff that she was going through. And then, you know, she was dating. She just loved not having to take care of a man, I think, for one, you know, and loved her little condo that she just decorated and her neighbors. And she had a really hard time when she had to sell it when she got married. She was devastated. She's like, she kept saying like, well, if it never doesn't work out, like I can always go back to my place. I mean, there was I think that was a sacred time for her. And
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good for her.
She made the best of it.
Yeah. She's a strong woman. Prairie woman.
Prairie woman.
Listen, change is constant. And so if you can embrace the change, there you go. So you told her, you came out, but we didn't get to the point where you realized yourself, all right, I'm gay. Like,
I don't know, age 2, age 10, age 12, age 30. You know, I don't have a definitive point where that happened.
Right.
I really don't. I just always knew it just evolved from being different to, oh yeah, I'm attracted to men.
Yeah.
It all evolved. And it evolved in a time when I was pushing it down and shoving it down and denying it and saying, no, that can't be. You're just a little weird, but you're okay. So I honestly can't say to you, you know, I can't say when I really realized that.
Right. And so I guess the question I'm asking is, when did you make the decision? This is it. I'm not hiding. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going
to
hide.
That day in the den when my wife said to me, we have no marriage, that opened the skies. And I was like, okay,
this is it.
She's right. She's given me an opportunity here to chart a different course. And for some reason, because I'm very ADD and scattered and all that, I got quiet. I just got quiet and I started thinking about it deeply. And what that would mean for me, for her, for my family, for everybody. It just naturally unfolded there for me after that. I knew I had to get out. I had to physically remove myself from that house. I had to find a place to live. I had to find a psychiatrist. I hadn't been in therapy ever in my whole life. And I needed that to figure out how to deal with all this and to admit to myself and to others. Find a pathway to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what therapy helped me do.
All right.
And I want to share this with you too, that so the day after, I believe, or the second day, whatever, after I had that conversation with my ex-wife and came out to her, and I think I said to her, please don't tell the kids, I want to tell them. So I flew to LA and God, we had this dinner at their apartment with Courtney's old
ex-fiance boyfriend.
Ex-fiance,
yeah, 8-year relationship.
Who?
Wonderful person.
Wonderful person. He's still close to me in my life. But anyway, and so we were all having, and I had made up my mind. I mean, I had to tell him. Yeah. There was no avoiding it. I had to tell him. And so we were all sitting around this table, and I guess it was at the end.
It was the very last, somebody took their last bite. And then you were like, guys, I have something really serious I want to talk to you about. And we all went, oh,
who's dying?
Yeah.
Who's got cancer?
Oh my God. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it's not that. I'm fine.
It was silence. And I said, you're gay. And you went, what? And yes. And then everybody like, and there was like complete silence. And then Jay goes, my ex was like, Glenn, we love you. Yeah. And it was like, and then we're like, yes, we love you. We love you. And we all gathered around him and hugged him.
Do you remember that last episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show? Well, in it, they're all leaving the newsroom and they're all such close friends, you know, Mary and all the, and they all make like a human huddle and they walk out of the studio moving as a human huddle. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful image. And that's my memory of what happened, is that we all stood up and did our own little human
hug.
And I just felt, oh, it was number one, I was so relieved because I know my girls. I know they love me. I know they're not going to turn on me or judge me. I know that. I know that. And I knew it going into that. I never really worried about, oh my God, they'll shut me out of their life. No, never even occurred to me. It was, how do I most gently and effectively sort of communicate this? But even so, it was a great, great relief. And I felt so supported. And I don't know, I had a new family now, not the old family, but a new family of three.
Yeah, version 2.0. But wait a second. How did you two?
Okay, I'll say it's really weird because I don't know why that came out of my mouth, because I truly and honestly didn't think that before. It wasn't in my mind. I don't think that I was thinking once they divorced, like, gosh, is dad gay? He must be gay. Like, that really wasn't ruminating in my mind. But it must have been subconsciously.
I'll tell you,
it was subconsciously.
What
okay.
There we go.
But so, then what I was going to say, I think when he said, when we all went, oh my God, do you have cancer? And he's like, no, nobody's sick. Then I was like, then you're gay. Like, it was kind of like, what's the other big news you got to share? You know, I don't know. You've already dropped the bomb. You're leaving mom. You know,
I have a boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, that came like the next morning when I was like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to start? How are you going to get out there? And you're like, well, I have a boyfriend. But that's for later. But anyway.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I remember it. We had gone to dinner the weekend before with a gay couple we are friends with. And Daddy had taken us on, I'm sorry, I'm divorcing your mom trip to Miami, to South Beach, Florida.
It's a really fun trip. I loved those super trips. Fun. There were a couple of those.
Yeah. So we had taken, you know, cute pictures. Obviously, my dad's very handsome. So we are showing them pictures and they're like, your dad's gay. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. We were like, no.
I'm like, I love you guys, but my dad's not gay.
And I don't think so. You guys really know. I really like, don't think so.
So, and then I was thinking about it. And I was like, God, I had a real, real reaction to that. I need to talk about that in therapy this week. So
I don't think I know this. I was supposed
to have therapy on Tuesday and I ended up having to skip it because I had like a work fire going on that I had to put out. So the next day is when Daddy came out. Oh,
I don't even think I knew that.
Yes. Oh, and so then I called my therapist and I was like, I'm going to need an emergency appointment this week.
I actually called. Oh my God. I made an emergency appointment too. My therapist started laughing, not like at you, but she was like, oh my God, this is great. You know, it's like, this is all coming together. Cause I was like in therapy for, I don't know, in my 29 years old, trying to figure out my life shit. And she's like, oh, wonderful. You know? Yeah.
That's just so funny that you just blurted it out and it was true. And then here we are. Now we're gay. And now dad's has a boyfriend.
That's 2 years older than Courtney.
I'd love him though.
All right. So you come out, relief. Yay. That weight is lifted. What happens? Because it's that you're married, sounds like. And so's Margaret. So what happened?
We separated and I lived in Dallas for a year while this divorce was going on. Then we divorced and then I moved to California. So in the latter part of that year,
met someone
and yeah, he happened to be
young.
And you know, it was sort of my gay adolescence, right?
Sure.
It's like, you know, I haven't been with any men. I don't know. And wow, some young hot stud kid finds me attractive. Really? Really? But I'm kind of old, but.
Head with your bad self, Glenn. Get it. Go ahead.
So yeah. So I had a fling with this guy and.
Fling? And, no. Brian?
That was a real relationship. That was a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, he moved to LA.
Well, I know.
Yeah. Don't call Brian a fling.
Okay. That's disrespectful.
I think
I'm
he was
sorry.
Part of the family.
He was. And I was very open about that with you guys. And And he was a sweetheart. A real sweetheart. A really nice, sensitive person. So that was my first. I didn't really date much or, you know.
Well, I will say that I think it was a lot easier on us to have dad have a boyfriend that was not like an older man. I don't know why he was like kind of around our age and, you know, he was like young and fun and cute.
We were all young and single and having fun together.
And
it was like the party days.
I think it also was like if our parents had gotten divorced And my dad started dating like a 35-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Like Courtney and I would have been pissed.
I know. It's like, it was like almost a relief that he was gay, yes. Honestly. Like, we didn't want to have to deal with some bitch that our mom would be all pissed off about. Right. You know,
it's there wasn't that competition.
Right.
Well, actually, then I did it for you.
You did. But it really made it easier for like.
I'm glad I could help you.
You did. Thanks, Daddy.
You're welcome.
Well, if I may, I'd really love to tell the story of how Drew was introduced to the family. His husband,
let's go there.
I want to just preface this by he's the most wonderful, generous man.
Yes.
He is the best dad, grandfather. He really is one of the most generous people I've ever met in my life. Yeah. So
we love him.
So
dearly.
Glad that they found each other. But it's a really funny story. So dad and his first relationship had been broken up for a year or so. And, you know, he was kind of dating, but nothing too serious. And I was getting married. I was just about to get married. I was a few weeks out from the wedding. And dad, got all the Texans coming in, big traditional hoopla of a wedding. Dad comes to me and he says, listen, I've met someone and it's the real deal. I mean it. It's the real deal. And I'd like him to come to your wedding. And I was like, you know, because like, not that I didn't want him to bring someone, but I'm thinking, oh my God, my mom. Oh my God, my mother-in-law. Oh my God, everybody and the Texans and this. And like, it was really heavy for me, you know, to deal with. And I was like, I mean, I don't think I'd met him yet. Or maybe I'd met him. Yeah, maybe I'd met him like once or twice, but it wasn't.
We've been together about 4 months.
No, it was like
you didn't introduce us.
Okay, right.
No, I didn't.
The way you introduced me is we were at brunch with friends. I thought he was dating someone else. And then this guy shows up to brunch. And I'm like,
okay. It felt like at the time in 14 years, 15 years ago, 16, however long it was, that it was
quick,
that it was like, it was new. And so I'm like, oh my God, I'm like weeks out from the wedding, you know? So I was like, of course he can come to the wedding, you know? And he comes and he, thank God, you know, and I just wish for whatever reason, because it was new, he wasn't in the pictures.
Oh, no.
And that's my biggest regret because he is our family. He was there and I'm so glad he was there. And
Yeah.
Me too.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned that he's a dad. Does he have his own? You said he's a great dad. Do you mean to you guys or does he have
to us? No, he doesn't have children, but you know, he's a wonderful father to us and a really wonderful grandfather to my children.
He came out like right after college. So he, you know, he's lived his adult life as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you found your person.
I found my person. I found not only a person, but I found a family, his family that are simply amazing. I love them so deeply. Mm-hmm. They have been so open and so generous and so kind to me and my daughters and just such loving people. Wow. I'm continually amazed by how much love there is and how they show it to one another. And so that's been just amazing. And my husband's mother, who passed away 2 years ago, she had so much impact on my life in the short time that I knew her. And I didn't come from a family with a very loving, nurturing mother at all. Mm-hmm. I love my mom, God bless her, but she was not a nurturer kind of woman. And Drew's mother was all of that to me. Mm-hmm. And I just had developed the deepest, most meaningful relationship with her. And I'm so grateful I had that opportunity to see what that love, that kind of motherly love means. And she just embraced me from the very beginning. And it was a really impactful.
And you got that second life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have this amazing life.
Yeah.
I have these girls that I absolutely adore and my granddaughters that are beyond precious to me. I've developed a second hobby / career as a abstract modernist painter. I'm obsessed with that. And I have a very full and rewarding life.
I know. I truly... I'm quite a spiritual person, and I truly believe the universe has provided us with all of these gifts that have led us to where we are today. And we are all living a much freer life, a more full life, and the life that at this time, at this moment, we're supposed to be living.
Love.
Yeah.
The gift of queerness. There it is.
Yes.
Yes. Totally.
I think
it is a gift.
Yeah.
I think our parents getting a divorce, our dad coming out is the best thing that ever happened to our family.
Yeah, oh. I agree.
And I say this to everyone. It brought me a dad, another dad, and another dad, my mom's husband, and a whole other family through Drew's family and through Dwight, my mom's husband. Mm-hmm. I'm super, we're super close with that family too.
Niece and nephew.
So it is really, truly, I think, the best gift that we had in a weird way, but I'm so thankful for it.
That's amazing. The more the merrier. And it sounds like Mark
absolutely
came out on the right side too. So everybody's doing great.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. Awesome. That is so beautiful. It's really like, it really is. That's what's resonating with me so much. It's just the power of acceptance and love. Oh God, if only this world was accepting and loving, you know, if everybody in this world, what a different world we'd live in. That's just beautiful. I'm so glad you came out, Glenn.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah.
I can honestly say, and I think Whitney agrees with me because we just said it in many more words, but I would not have it any other way.
Me too.
Never. No regrets.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. And I think what you're doing, Jamie, is so important.
Yeah.
Your podcast.
Yes. And bringing light to that.
And exactly. And telling these stories that not everybody understands and from people's perspective is just so wonderful. And, you know, we want to support you in any way and get the message out there about what amazing work you're doing too. Oh.
Yes. I've lived a long life already and I'm so encouraged now that younger and younger kids are finding the strength and the power to come out and be, accept their reality and accept themselves. And it just gives me such hope and such promise for the future because that's a lot of years of suffering in there that doesn't necessarily have to happen. And I'm encouraged that socially, maybe not everywhere, but acceptance is coming. Acceptance is growing, especially among, you know, junior high kids and high school kids. And that's just so beautiful to me that
there's an awakening.
Yeah. There's an openness.
There is an openness with the youth. You're right. And it's getting
easier
and easier. And, but also I'm not going to give up until heterosexuality is not the norm, until there's no coming out, until it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
The youth of today, because they're like, what's the big, they, you know, they're changing the world, but we're not there yet, right? We're not there. There still is the norm. There still is the box. And that's why it's important to tell these stories and show up, right? I love it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Tell everybody where they can find y'all and hear your amazing podcast and tell them what it's about.
It is called Hey Sis, Eat This, and you can find that on Instagram or on Spotify, Apple, iHeart, all the best. And our website is heysiseatthis.com, and the podcast is about food and family, and we celebrate mamas, and we have guests on to talk about what it was like at their dinner table, favorite meal their mama made, and how their mama handled the sex talk sometimes.
Oh.
And
I could have got
our website.
Best
has
drunk mom stories, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Actually, GJ, that's his grandpa name, not Glenn, but GJ. Glenn is on, I think it's episode 3 or 4. It's hysterical. He comes on with his sister and they talk about their mom and their childhood and the food related stories around growing up. And it's really funny.
And on Father's Day, where he tells a story of coming out to us.
He tells a story on Father's Day.
Can I put a plug in for?
Yes.
So if someone is interested in modernist contemporary paintings, my website is Glenn with two N's. AshleyArt.com.
Okay. Support queer artists. There it is.
Yeah.
Really.
The stuff's incredible.
Oh, I can't. I'm going to go check it out. Thank you all so much for telling your beautiful story. And everybody go tune in. And I'll
thank you for
you.
Having us. And
thank you so much.
It's very special.
Thank you.
This has been great.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah Baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.